When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In Holy Week 1916, I came to Dublin on Spy Wednesday. I came for the specific purpose of spending a holiday with my fiancée, who was then a medical student in Dublin. Having arrived in Dublin, I proceeded, as was my usual bent, to Dalier Street to see Sean McDermott, who was a personal friend of mine from the year 1910. As soon as he saw me, it was in the office of Irish Freedom, and he asked me when I came to Dublin and why I had come, and made a few joking remarks about coming up to see my girl, and how was she, and whom he knew also. Then he asked me if I had heard anything, and I said, no, I hadn't heard anything. Had I heard anything of importance? And I said, no, I hadn't heard anything. Well, he said, is there any other reason why you're in town? And I said, no, that was the only reason. How long did I intend to stay? And I said that I intended to stay over until after Easter Monday. He then asked me if the stuff had been delivered, had been distributed. The stuff that he referred to was a consignment of small arms and ammunition that had come into my possession on the basis of a delivery note that was sent to me by Dr. McCartan from Tyrone. I took delivery of this myself alone. Early in 1916, I would say towards the end of February or beginning of March.
This was in Derry?
In Derry. Mm. This stuff was about half a ton of stuff. I had kept under my own supervision and in safety, and it was in my possession at the time. He asked me if Dr. McCartan had been down with me and had given me any directions about it, and I said no, that he had been down and inquired as to whether it was safe, and he had tea with me in my own home, and I told him that he could inspect it, that it was perfectly safe, but he didn't give me any instructions as to the distribution of it. So McDermott, Sean, then said to me, that stuff will have to be distributed. I was in a room alone with him in the inner room. There were two rooms in the flat where the Irish Freedom was produced, and I was in the inner room with him alone. And he said that he had some very important information to give to me. And he gave me again the oath of allegiance, the IRB oath, of strictest possible secrecy. Having taken the oath again, he then told me that they were striking on Sunday night at 6 o'clock, and both of us shook hands. And I said that I was very lucky being in Dublin, because I was always afraid that communications with Derry would break down and that we would be left out of the fight. Well, he said, I'm afraid, he said, you won't be in Dublin on Sunday night because each man is required in his own area. I beseeched him, and he said, I beseeched for permission to stay, and he said, no, you will have to get back apart altogether from the work that you will have to do. This stuff must be distributed. I want you to take your brother Seamus with you and go back tonight. That was Holy Thursday night. Go back tonight to Derry and get in touch with Dr. McCartan and tell him that you have instructions from me, that is Sean McDermott, to distribute this stuff and give Dr. McCartan the opportunity of taking from it whatever his requirements, requirements needed, and to distribute the rest by sending back with Seamus as much as he could carry and keeping the rest for Derry. So I told him that I would find it very difficult taking Seamus back with me on such short notice unless I told him, and I would prefer that he, Sean McDermott, would tell him himself. So he told me then to ask Seamus to come down to see him. So I proceeded to Connacht Street, where my brother lived, and I told Seamus that Sean McDermott wanted him, and I went off for the evening. That evening I contacted Seamus again, and he told me then that Sean McDermott had told him to come along with me to Derry. And we had to make some excuse, both to my intendant and his wife, as to where we were going and what we were going to do, and I manufactured the story that my sister Mary, who was ill actually at the time I left Derry, had had a turn for the worse and that both of us were summoned home. So on the night mail train, we left Amiens Street and we landed in Derry at somewhere about 3 o'clock on Good Friday morning. Instead of going to directly to our home, which was some distance from the station, and feeling that we would be drawing attention more or less to our presence to the old town, as well as knocking up the people in the street that hour of the morning, we decided to stay in an hotel, the Metropole, at the Great Northern Station. We rang the hotel bell and got in, and we weren't quite in the hotel registering when another bell rang and an RIC detective came in. He asked me why I was staying there and why I wasn't going home. And I told him that I wasn't going home because I didn't want to disturb my parents and that hour of the morning. We went to bed. And
he was satisfied with that, was he?
He seemed to have been. Yeah. He examined to see whether we had registered in our own names, which we had. Mm. And he went off. We went to bed, and the following morning at about 9 o'clock, we appeared at our own home. I had the task then of getting in touch with Dr. McCartan, and immediately I contacted Sam Sherrod, who was in William Street, and I'm nearly certain it was Sherrod's car that I took, because I'm not quite certain of that, but at any rate, it was a car from William Street, and it wasn't Johnny Doherty's, which was the usual car that I had engaged. But I took my sister Roisin with me into Tyrone to contact McCartan, and I drove straight to Gorchin, which was his dispensary district. At least that was the information that I had. And the lady in charge...
That you were to go to Gorchin.
Yeah, that I was...
contact him there.
I had to go to Gorchin to contact him there. And when I got to Gorchin, I was talked to the woman of the house, I presume the caretaker of the Gorchin dispensary, and she told me that Dr. McCartan wasn't there, and that he hadn't been there the day before or the day before that, and that she didn't know where he was or how she could get in touch with him. So then I said that I would leave a note. And I left a note to the effect that I had been instructed from Dublin to distribute the stuff without mentioning what it was, and that if he had any, if he required any of it, to send me the requisitions, and that it would be kept for him. Mm-hmm. And I returned to Dublin. I had given instructions in Derry to have the my own OC, who didn't know actually how much stuff I had in my possession as a result of the coup that I had accomplished myself. I told him that two portmanteaus of this stuff would have to be packed, to enable Seamus to take it to Dublin the following Saturday morning. And I wanted to get the other remains of it so placed that it could be handed around in the event of Dr. McCartan sending down any requisition. So I got back to town on Friday evening, having left that message in Gorchin, and got no message from Dr. McCartan, but my brother Seamus set off on the 20 past 7 train from Derry on Easter Saturday morning for Dublin. And I was left in Dublin. I was left in Derry. Yeah. I should say
and he brought
that ammunition and small arms to Dublin with him, which would you hand it over to the volunteers. I should say that when I was saying goodbye to Sean McDermott, I pointed out to him that I was afraid that we would be left out of the fight at the people in Derry, as I had been always conscious of the fact that we were more or less isolated and that there were very poor communications. He told me not to worry, that we would have our communications, our directions or orders given to us all right. I still insisted that there was a possibility that we wouldn't get our orders, and asked him what was the position in regard to us in the event of orders not coming. At that stage, he told me that if no orders came by 9 o'clock on Sunday night, that we would be at liberty to strike. On Saturday, I was at my father's business place where I worked at that particular time, and having contacted my OC, who was Seamus Kavanagh, who now dead, God be merciful to him, I told Seamus Kavanagh that I had been to Dublin and that I was told in Dublin that very important orders were due to come to him through me or direct to himself sometime during the day on Saturday. And I asked him that, I told him also that I was told to tell him to report to me every hour on the hour at in Derry, so that we would get these orders into each other's hands as quickly as possible. I did not tell him that the rising was to take place, because I had no authority to tell him that until 9 o'clock at night. So every hour on the hour during that Saturday, Seamus Kavanagh reported to me at the office of my father's business. Now, he was the OC, although I was in charge of A Company. He was reporting to me, not for the purpose of collecting orders that were supposed to come either through me or direct to him. So no orders came direct to him nor to me until up to 9 o'clock on Saturday night. And at that hour, I then closed the office door and I told him the position in regard to the rising, and that they were striking, as I was told, in Dublin at 6 o'clock on Sunday night, and that we in Derry would be free, if we got no further orders, to strike at 9. So he shook my hand and said something like, "At last the day has come," or something like that, and he instructed me to meet him the following morning at 9 o'clock. So the following morning, I got up and went to 8 o'clock Mass. I mention that because when I came home from 8 o'clock Mass, the morning post and Sunday morning post, as was at that time, was delivered. And on that post, there was a letter for me from Dr. McCartan. And that letter read as follows, to the best of my recollection: "Go to," I think it was a White Horse Hotel, but an hotel in Strabane at any rate, designated by name, "and take a message there from Seamus Cassidy." I had never met Seamus Cassidy in my life. I didn't know what he looked like, and I didn't know where he lived, or what he did, or what position he had in the organization as far as Ireland was concerned. But I had these instructions from McCartan, and I put the letter in my pocket to take with me to meet my own OC at 9. on my way to meet him at the cattle pens at Derry, behind the on the quays, where we had arranged, I had to pass the stationer's shop of Charlie Breslin, who is also dead now. God be merciful to him. Charlie Breslin was a member of the Volunteers and had been a staunch friend of Ireland throughout his whole life. He was a Donegal man, and he was the person who stocked all of the national papers, etc., etc., during the period that these papers were in circulation. On that particular morning, Easter Sunday morning, I called and I bought the morning Independent, Sunday Independent. And in the Sunday Independent, there was a countermanding order from Owen McNeill. When I therefore reached Seamus Kavanagh, my OC, I had the countermanding order of McNeill's on the Independent, and I also had a letter from Dr. McCartan. Both of these were handed to Seamus, and he read them. And we discussed the possibility of the message that we were that I was to collect in Strabane, that it could be either one or other of two things, confirming Owen McNeill's countermanding order or telling us not to take any notice of it. It's interesting at this stage to say that both of us were afraid that the countermanding order should be looked upon as a ruse rather than anything else. I was ordered by my OC to proceed to Strabane and to take the message from Seamus Cassidy. I immediately made such arrangements and went with Johnny Corney Doherty on a sidecar to Strabane. When I got to Strabane, I called at this hotel and I could get no reply. Finally, a woman put her head out a window and asked me what did I want. I told her that I wanted to speak to Seamus Cassidy, and she told me that he wasn't there, and that he had gone home. I said, where did he live? And she told me that he lived in Ballybuffet. I asked her for the address. She didn't know the address, but she said that he lived in a house where singer Sean Michaud Machine had a display or office. So I then thanked her and sent the car back, the sidecar back to Derry, and hired through Dan Doherty of Strabane, who is also dead, God be merciful to him, a Ford car driven by a boy called Quigley, and drove into Ballybuffet. I got to the house, found out the singer's show machine shop, and made inquiries there for Cassidy, and I was told that he had gone up to Broadbins, another name of a man whom I hadn't known before. I had never met, and I hadn't heard the name mentioned ever before. However, I went up there, and as far as I recollect, it was a pub, but I'm not quite sure of that. It was a shop anywhere, at least it had a shop front. And as it being Sunday morning, of course, there was no evidence of any sales or anything like that. But when I made inquiries there, I was told that Broadman and Cassidy had gone out on a cockfighting expedition. I asked them what road they had gone, and they told me that they had gone out on the Gap Road. So
did the cockfighting convey anything to you?
No, it didn't convey anything to me, except that it was the excuse given by them on their way out to do something in connection with the day's work for Volunteers. So I told young Quigley to drive me up the Gap Road, and we went up the Gap Road and had scouted round in all directions, but we could see no two men walking or otherwise in the, on the road or in any of the fields around about. Searched for a considerable time, and I couldn't find anybody. My time was limited because I had to get back to Derry before 9 o'clock that night. We were supposed to strike at that time. And not being able to contact either Cassidy or anybody else, I came down to Derry with Quigley in Quigley's car. It was a very wet night, and I told him to wait for me while I consulted with a friend in Derry. He didn't know what job I was on, this particular boy, but he was quite a good boy. I immediately reported to my OC that I could get nobody of the name Cassidy, or either there or the other place directed in Ballybuffet, and Then he decided to call the officers of the volunteers. Now, these men had held officer rank, but in view of the smallness of the crowd that the volunteers, original volunteers, had dwindled to, some of them had no command. But they were all brought in at any rate, and we met upstairs in Breslin's, where I had bought the morning paper. And it was then somewhere about 8 o'clock in the evening, and at that meeting, it was disclosed to them why they were called together, what had happened in the meantime, orders that had come from Dublin through me, and they had more or less a council of war, and they decided to send me back into Tyrone again to get in touch with McCartan at all costs, and that in the meantime the volunteers in Derry would be mobilised under arms. So I was armed and proceeded to go into Tyrone again to get McCartan. And on the way, I collected Dan Doherty of Strabane, who came with me through the night. We went up and into Gorchin again and into Carrickmore, by motor car. Mm-hmm. And we were travelling through the night, but I could get no hint of where McCartan was. But somebody mentioned that he might be with Dr. Paddy O'Doherty, who was a relative of mine and was at RMS in the Mumma Hospital. And on that night, around midnight or thereabouts, I think, I called on him at Oma Mental Hospital to find out if he knew where McCartan was, or if McCartan was with him, or if he could get in contact with him, and he didn't know anything about McCartan or where he was. So I then headed back for Derry. Now, my reason for going back to Derry at that particular hour in the morning was that before leaving, it was decided by the group in Derry that if I didn't return by 6 o'clock in the morning, that was 6 o'clock on Monday morning, that they would take it for granted that I had either been captured or killed, and that they would start a fight. So that it was during the night that I realised the more or less silliness of this decision, because I could have been delayed past 6 o'clock in the morning through a breakdown of the car and so on, and I was rather agitated to get back as near as possible to six, fearing anything would happen that would militate against the volunteer position. So we started back, and beyond Newton Stewart, somewhere on the Newton Stewart side of Derry, the night train from Dublin came. That's the train that left Dublin at 9 o'clock the night before. So that I knew then, when I saw the night mail train going through, that there was no possibility of any fight having taken place in Dublin on Sunday at 6 o'clock as prearranged. So I got into Derry then at about 5 minutes to six, and I was coming across Foyle Street on the way to where the boys were mobilised in our own stables at the top of William Street. And on the way across Foyle Street, I met my OC, and they had come to the same conclusion during the night that it would be silly to take any action if I didn't return, and that they had dispersed just at about 10 minutes to 12 or a quarter to six. So I went home then, and I made the excuse at home that I had been out on volunteer work during the night, and I went off to bed. Sometime early in the morning, I was awakened. When I say early, that is, I went to bed sometime around 7:30, and at about 10 o'clock, I'd say, I got a telegram from Dublin, who came up and wakened me and handed me a telegram from Dublin, and it was from my betrothed, asking me to come back. She then knew that Seamus had returned to Dublin, and of course, having been told that my sister was ill, she came to the conclusion that it couldn't be too bad when Seamus was in, and for me to come on up, and she was on holidays, and keep my appointment, you see, with her.
Yes, this was Monday morning.
Monday morning.
Yes.
So I sent her a reply to say that I would go up, I think it was the following day. And when the telegram went down, when my messenger, I think it was my sister Rose again, went down with it to the post office, she came back to say that they wouldn't take the telegram as there was no communication with Dublin. So I got up out of bed immediately and went straight to the post office myself, and I went in and I wrote a telegram. And when I went into the post office, I discovered that there was an RIC man outside the post office counter, and there was a detective sitting inside the counter. However, I wrote my telegram and I handed it to the clerk in the post office, and they said they weren't taking any telegrams from Dublin. I asked why, and they told me that this particular clerk told me that communication has broken down, and he said it was a dreadful night and that the wires were down. Well, I knew that they went down because I had already received a telegram that morning from Dublin, and I immediately then went to my OC and I told him these circumstances. So he decided to remobilise the volunteers again for that for Monday night, and they were remobilised for Monday night. We got information then, there were rumours going around during the day, the fighting was taking place in Dublin, but not very definite rumours. But at any rate, we were satisfied that fighting was going on from what took place and what we had already known. And it was suggested to us that we would take action on the following morning, or on Tuesday. Tuesday, we had information from one of our members who was scouting in the Emmerington barracks to the effect that troops were leaving Derry on Tuesday. Whether these troops were going to Dublin or elsewhere, I don't know, but they were leaving Derry at any rate, and it was decided that we'd blow the train up. And Tuesday evening, I think it was to leave. Mm-hmm. So on Tuesday morning,
some of the boys gone to the pictures that night too and seen notices in the cinema?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that is quite true. When notification was sent out for remobilisation of the volunteers and they were waiting for the boys to assemble, some of the boys came along and said that they had been to the pictures that night and that on the screen was thrown a mobilisation that all men in British uniforms should report immediately to Abingdon Barracks. Well, that confirmed our views then, and it was more or less at that stage that we had decided that men would be under arms during the night and that the following day that action would be taken. On Tuesday, early on Tuesday morning, I'm not quite certain of the time, Barney McKenna from Strabane, a man whom I had never met before, but whom I got to know subsequently very well, came down to Derry and reported to me to the effect that he had been sent with a message from McCartan. Whether he got it directly from Dr. McCartan or not, I don't know, but the message was as follows. Hold in readiness with you tomorrow or Thursday. Now, that tied the hands of the group of volunteers in Derry until Thursday. And by that time, there were all sorts of rumours going, rumours that that Germans had made landings even as near to us as the Donegal coast, that Germans had made landings in the west and in the south, also rumours to the effect that the volunteers had been defeated and that the whole fight was over, etc., etc. But on tied our hands at any rate until Thursday, we didn't know what to do, where to turn. We had no message from anybody, no contact with anybody. We were never mobilised for Coal Island, where I understood subsequently lots of the Ulster volunteers had assembled, but I can assure you that no message ever came from anybody in the north of Ireland to us in regard to what should be done, where we should go, what we should do, what arms we should have, or anything else.
So it was all over practically by then.
It was all over by then. We were arrested the following week.
Cathal, I wonder if you could give us just some idea of the background to 1916 in the north.
Well, very briefly, in the north, like everywhere else, its connection with the Easter week came through the IRB. There was an old tradition in a number of IRB circles in Belfast, Derry, Derry County, Tyrone, various other places, and that was really the background in Belfast and the north. What you might call an immediate thing was the outbreak of the war in 1914, or rather, the split in the volunteers after that. But however, at the outbreak of the war, James Connolly asked me to go to Denny McCullough, whom I think he suspected was a member of the Supreme Council of the IRB, to tell him to tell his friends in Dublin, meaning, of course, the IRB, that he was prepared to cooperate with them in insurrection before the war would finish. Now, the next thing I think that we might come on to from that would be 1915. There was a good deal of connection between Pierce, Connolly, McDermott, Clark, and all that back and forwards. As a matter of fact, a number of the Easter Week men were really Northerns, as you know very well. Tom Clark was brought up in Dungannon, and McDermott was trained into nationalism in Belfast. And then there was Denny McCullough and Bulmer Hobson and various other people like that. But take now in... well, really, be better to come on to near Easter Week itself. And that was in February 1916, shortly after Connolly's alleged kidnapping. He wasn't kidnapped, of course, at all. But after that, shortly after that, I asked Connolly any news of anything doing or anything like that. Well, so see, the date is fixed, definitely fixed. Not as early as I'd have liked, but it's fixed definitely, and it will do. He couldn't, he told me, tell me when it was, because that wasn't to be disclosed, as five others and himself were on their oath not to disclose it until the time came for insurrection. I guessed that three of the others would be Pierce, Clark and McDermott. I didn't know, obviously, I think the other two must have been Plunkett and Kent. But that, I think, was the nearest we could get. Now, sometime after that, not very long, I think, in the next month, March, the beginning of March, Pierce came up to Belfast to deliver in St. Mary's Hall for the volunteers the annual Emmet commemoration lecture. After his lecture, he came along to me and said that I was asked by McDermott or some of them in Dublin to go to Balnea and do the lecture there, because Hearn, Archie Hearn, the volunteer organiser, had been deported or ordered out of Cavan and Balnea. I came on to Dublin from Balnea, called on Connolly, told Connolly something that Hobson was supposed to have said to the late Joe Connolly. Connolly asked me to go up to Clark and tell Clark that. I went up to Clark, and Clark was, well, he was very peeved over the whole thing. But however, that wasn't the really important thing. I think the really important thing was Clark asked me if Connolly had given me anything. I said no, he hadn't. Well, so see, go back to him now and ask him for that. And he emphasised the word that, and take it back with you to McCullough and Belfast. I went back to Connolly. Connolly told him Clark's message. Connolly produced a paper in his own very crabbed handwriting and dictated or read it out to me, although I could have read it myself. And an outline, briefly, it was plans for the mobilisation of the companies of the volunteers in the north for insurrection. No date or anything like that, or no orders or anything like that, but just assembly points and one thing or another like that. When I looked
at... Was Coal Island mentioned, by the way?
Yes. Well, I'm not quite sure. Mm. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I'm rather vague on the details of the thing. But it was for the mobilisation of the northern companies of the volunteers. And as far as I recollect, the idea was some sort of an approach from the north, from Ulster, over into Connacht. There was some question of the line of the Shannon or something like that, mm-hmm. but I'm not very clear on details or anything like that.
Well, did you ever hear why Coal Island was selected?
Well, I never did, no. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that at all.
Except but that it was more or less on the route. If they were going west, say, through Carrickmore and the west part of Tyrone, or...
It would be, it would be. Thereabouts would be a good assembly point for the Belfast people and the Tyrone people.
And then it was a good nationalist area.
Oh, very strongly. And I mean, that part of Tyrone was very strongly and strongly Republican and IRB, if you'd Dungannon. And all that, there were a great number of, well, I don't say a great many, but a very strong national Republican feeling, and IRB circles are around there. Now, when Connolly gave me this, I made some comment about it, and to some comment of mine about the bigness of the task that the papers seemed to set out for the Ulster companies. I rather was sceptical about it. Connolly replied, and he said that he was assured that the forces in the north were sufficient for that job, whatever it was. He agreed that to his own knowledge, of course, we were comparatively few in Belfast, and he expressed surprise when I doubted if the volunteers in any other part of the north were as many or more than the 100 or 150 or so that we had in Belfast. So that was, now that would be, I think, in sometime in March. That would be in March. Now, the next thing, I think that, and in these things, I only want to speak of what I know personally, not what somebody said afterwards or what somebody said at the time, but my own personal knowledge of the thing. The next thing I think that we should come to is really to the mobilisation on the eve of Easter Sunday. We were called together in the Hudson Willibank in Belfast. That was our drill hall. Of course, after the split, we were only about 100 or 150 volunteers, and maybe two or three dozen, if there were two or three dozen, IRB men, maybe not two or three dozen, but Fianna boys and all that.
And many of them, would there have been?
Well, now, they would have been as numerous as the volunteers, I think, because there were three or four companies of them, and there was a girls, the only girl slewer of the Fianna were in Belfast. And then, of course, there were the coming of man as well. Excuse me. But on Good Friday, Thursday night and Friday night, we were called to the huts, and we were numbered off in various contingents for mobilisation in Tyrone for Easter Sunday. We were to travel by three trains and three lots from Belfast. About 2 o'clock was one of them, and one about between 3 and 4, and one between 9 and 10. I think it was, as a matter of fact, nearer 10. For Saturday, that's for Saturday night. Men in charge of these were Sean Kelly, an old Fianna boy, Charlie Madole, Sean McGoran, and I think Archie Henn. Some of the men had been already sent up to Tyrone, Seamus Dempsey, and I think there were a couple of men from Scotland were there. Now, I was to travel on the 3 o'clock or 3.40 or 3.50 train or whatever it was on the Saturday, my contingent. But unfortunately, when I got home to lunch, I found that there was a conscientious objector there had been carted over to me from Scotland, and I was asked to look after him. I had a
good man in that position.
Well, it was, I was going to go to war, and there I was giving shelter to a man who was dead against war, and a Scotsman at that. But anyhow, I had to spend several hours, couldn't get away on the train that I should have gone, and didn't get to, until the 9.50 or whatever it was at night. And then that was to Coal Island. We understood that we would be joined in Coal Island on the Sunday by Tyrone contingents, but we didn't know a great deal about that. But anyhow, I went on and got to Coal Island and found that the men were there, our men were there encamped. And whether it was because I had missed my proper train, I was put on sentry go for most of the night.
As a punishment, you think?
Well, I don't know, but anyhow, I was put on sentry go, at all events. Dennis McCullough, of course, was the officer in charge, but the working officer in charge was Peter Burns, who's now dead. But Dennis McCullough, of course, was the centre of the organisation, the IRB in Belfast, and some of us knew, those of us who were centres and had work to do in other centres knew that he was a member of the Supreme Council of the IRB, but we didn't know, of course, that he actually at the time was president of the Supreme Council at that particular time. Now, on Sunday forenoon sometime or other, I was happened to be reading a book. We'd all been at Mass, and we were resting, talking, and one thing or another, knocking around, when a message came to me to tell me that McCullough wanted to see me. I got up and went to where McCullough was, and with McCullough was Dr. Pat McCartan, who was also a very prominent IRB man, whom I knew very well. McCullough, and they had with him a man called Pym, Herbert Moore Pym, who was not of any great consequence, certainly not in the IRB or anything like that. But anyhow, I gathered from McCullough that there was some question had arisen whether or not our men should remain where they were in Tyrone, or go back home. That was a bit of a puzzle to me. Some of us had been disappointed that we hadn't seen very many of the Tyrone men whom we expected. But anyhow, I was told something about a motor car arriving there, something, whether it was that morning or not, I don't know. But as far as I can remember, and in these things,
you've got to depend on your own memory. Well, really,
you should give no more than one's clear memory. It was put to me by McCullough that men in a position to judge, I gathered that the men in the position to judge he was referring to were a Father Coyle and a Father Daly, that they had come to the conclusion that the Belfast men should return home, that for all practical purposes, the only body in arms, or likely to be in arms, in the north, was the Belfast contingent, and that if they remained there, they were likely to be the object of attack. It was suggested that Father Coyle and Father Daly had said that they would not allow the Tyrone volunteers to go outside their own county. And the plans were that the whole contingents were to go out, I understood, away to in the direction of Connacht. But at all events, that was the position then, and I was asked, what did I think of it? Well, I objected immediately to the whole idea of returning home, and without getting it definitely in so many words, I gathered quite clearly and definitely that whatever was on for that day was now off. Pym, at a yard or two distance, confined himself to scornful expressions, and my attitude is foolish. Well, that finished the consultation as far as I was concerned, and McCartan was there, and he seemed very undecided. But to do him justice, he said that whatever, sometimes he seemed to be for his remaining, sometimes for his going, but to do him justice, he said that whatever was decided on, he would fall in with it, and he would take, and he would take whatever consequences were coming.
Well, do you remember much then, Cahill, of what you did during the day on the Sunday in Coal Island?
Well, I didn't do very much because, as a matter of fact, I was reading a book called In the Midst of War by an American, Ambrose Bierce.
And suitable book, too.
Well, yes, no, but I was reading an even more interesting thing, Father Toole's edition of Tuaregh de Lár Chríste, which had only just then come out. You know the thing, the Imitation of Christ. Mm-hmm. It had just come out, and I had it, and it was like a prayer book for me there. I don't remember very much until sometime later on, we got the order to fall in. We fell in, and we were marched off. Now, on the march, there was a good deal of speculation among those in the ranks around me as to what direction we were going in. None of them knew very well, and none of us knew very well where we were going, except, of course, the officers in command. But, of course, when I got to Stewartstown, I knew Stewartstown very well because I'd been there 9 years before and had been on a holiday in the house of Joe McKelvey's mother. And I knew Stewartstown, and then I said, we're for home, we're going to Cookstown, we're for home. And it was to Cookstown, and on the train on the Northern Counties Railway from Cookstown to Belfast. But in or about Cookstown, or the borders of Cookstown, a shot was fired by one of our men in the back ranks, and two of our men were arrested, a man named John Dillon and another named Jerry Hurley. Jerry was a very good fellow, as a matter of fact, he was an officer in the IRA in the Black and Tan War and was killed, I don't know whether it was at Clonmulk, but in one of the fights in County Cork, a very good fellow indeed. Well, anyhow, we were arrived in Belfast and we dispersed there, and some of us went to the Gaelic League rooms, the Crave Rua, where we often assembled at night, discussing what the devil had happened and all that, but not known very much about it. When in came Albert Cotton. Albert Cotton was a volunteer, a Belfast man, a Protestant, had been organiser for the volunteers in Kerry, but had been ordered out of it and was in Belfast. And he brought in the news about McNeill's counter-order from the Sunday Independent. That certainly was the first time that I heard, or most of us heard, anything about the counter-order. We heard nothing about it in the camp at Coal Island or anything like that. And it didn't appear then that our orders were in... Departure from Coal Island was in response to that counter-order. However, that's another day's question. Thinking that something must surely be wrong, I left the Crave Rue and went to the post office in Royal Avenue in Belfast, brought a young Fianna boy with me named Wardlaw, and what I wanted to do was to try and get on the telephone to Liberty Hall, to Connolly, to see what the devil had happened. But of course I wasn't able to get through on the telephone, in spite of all my efforts. Afterwards, as it transpired, there was a meeting, I think, of the military council there, but we knew nothing about that kind of thing. Then I told Cotton when I came back that I would head off for Belfast first train in the morning. He said that he was on orders to report to the volunteers on Monday morning in Dublin. It was agreed then that he would go on, report back to us, and that I would remain. Now, we were in no news on the Monday, and we were all at all sorts of ends on Monday, wondering what the devil had happened, when news came to us on Monday night about the fighting in Dublin. That set us all agog, and there was an attempt then made by a number of the men, Sam Hearn, Liam Gaynor, Seamus Dobbin, I think, and a few more, to try to remobilise our Belfast men. And a number of them were got together in a place called the Convent Fields, and we argued there for hours till the early hours of the morning, but nothing was done. The idea, I think, then and on Tuesday, was to try to remobilise our men in Belfast and try and get a way back to Tyrone to join up again with the Tyrone men, whom, by the way, we didn't see much of, although I think that a party of cyclists, some 15 or 20 of them, had paid a visit to our camp or something like that. But anyhow, things looked so black and so blue that a couple of others, one of them was Dan Braniff and myself, decided on the Tuesday that we'd set off for Dublin to join in the fighting if we could. Dan and I did set off on the Wednesday and down to County Down by a train then on foot most of the way. We heard in Louth about McEntee's troop operating there. We tried to join them, but we didn't come across them. Came on, then we heard in Meath about fighting again. We didn't know who it was, but it was obviously the company under Tom Ash and Dick Mulcahy, but we weren't able to get them either. So we came on to Dublin, right through to Dublin, to Phippsborough. Got a bit of a lift in from Finglas to Phippsborough, and then got managed by a bit of manoeuvring, got through the lines in, at the, there's a public house there, I forget the name of it, down Whitworth Road, and made straight for the house of Cooler, Paddy McGinley, whom I knew lived in Drumcondra Road. That really was the termination, so far as I was concerned, of the connection with the fighting or the Easter week in the north. We found the old coup in very good form, and one of the things he said, he must have been studying operations, one of the things he said was that if everybody had turned out as they should have turned out on Easter Monday in Dublin, he thought that the boys, as he called them, would have been able to last not 1 week but another week. Mm-hmm. Then came back, Braniff and I came back, and I was arrested in Belfast, and next thing, didn't meet any of our Belfast men until I met him again. And at the end of the, towards the end of the week in Belfast jail. Now, actually, it's as well that I should mention it. There were a number of Belfast people or people with Belfast connections who were in the actual fighting and the actual rising. Connolly, of course, and McDermott were executed. McDermott had got his training, his national training in Belfast. But there was also, before the actual fighting, there was Charlie Monaghan, a Belfast man living here in Dublin. He was one of the three who were drowned at Ballykissan Pier on the Good Friday or whatever time it was, just before the thing. And there was also his brother, Alf Monaghan, who was pretty well known in the Gaelic League. Alf was fighting in Liam Mellow's contingent over in Galway. Then there was Harry Shields, one of our Belfast boys, was very badly wounded in the fighting here in Dublin, so badly wounded like Carl Brew and Liam Clark, he wasn't imprisoned or anything like that. Sean McEntee, of course, Belfast man, was in command of the volunteers in Louth and then went on to the post office in Dublin. There were a number of the Coming of Man girls who took part too. Some of them had come to Tyrone. Winifred Kearney, one of them, an associate of ours in the Irish Transport Union. She was in the GPO acting as a sort of civil secretary to Pearson Connolly during the fighting. And then there was Nora and Dinah Connolly who came on from Tyrone to Dublin, Eileen Carr and some others, and acted as couriers. That is, in brief, my connection with Ulster and Ulster in Easter week 16.
Well, there's just one question I'd like to ask, Cathal. Did you ever hear that Connolly had said that there wasn't to be a shot fired in Ulster, that that decision had been made sometime before before the rising?
Well, I have that from Dennis McCullough, and I don't doubt Dennis's word on that, because, as I've said, my recollection is that the contingents, that the Ulster contingents were to go into Connacht on the line of the Shannon. And in justice to McCullough, I must say that McCullough disclaims getting from me that plan that I referred to, that Clark got me to get from Connolly. But it is McCullough is very positive that the orders were that there wasn't to be a shot fired in Ulster. Yeah. But personally, I've no knowledge of that. After all, in the actual fighting, I was simply an ordinary private volunteer, although I was prominent and active and had the confidence of the IRB men, but that was in the IRB.
Well, would you think it possible that Connolly might have changed his mind when Nora came back from Tyrone with the word that there had been a mobilisation and that something might be possible?
Well, it's possible. It's quite possible that when Nora brought him word that men had actually mobilised in Tyrone, it's quite possible that there may have been a change of plan or of opinion.
Because but you never heard of any plans for Tyrone itself, or
no,
any taking of barracks
no,
and tracks or
no,
anything like that?
No, I never heard anything definite about that at all. But I think that it's quite possible, because the circumstances under which the rising actually took place on the Monday were different from the circumstances which would have been prevailing on the Sunday. Mm-hmm. And it's quite possible that there may have been changes, and that the couriers carried different instructions from what had originally been planned.
Now, Sean, do you remember getting your orders on just before Easter 1916?
Aye, Holy Thursday night. I was mobilised by a chap called Sean Grubbin from Derry, who worked in Belfast.
He was an IRB man?
He was.
And you were nearly all in the IRB?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what were the orders?
Three days rations and skeleton equipment. The arms had already gone up the week before to Cull Island.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did you set out then for Tyrone?
On Saturday night by train on the Great Northern. Arrived in Dungannon and marched from Dungannon till Cull Island was billeted in St. Patrick's Hall. And guards and of course and all were mounted, and Easter Sunday morning went to Mass in Cull Island Church. The next couple of hours we just stayed about the hall, and later in the evening word apparently came from Dublin countermarching the orders, and we were a march from Cull Island till Cookstown and entrained there for Belfast, arriving on Easter Sunday night back in the city.
Well, did anything happen on the way back from Cull Island?
Entering Cookstown, a part known as Gortlery, a shot was fired. And when we were opposite the police barrack, a good distance from where the incident happened, the police rushed out and seized a man from the rear file. And a chap attempted to rescue him, Jerry Hurley, from Cork, who was later killed in the Tan War in County Cork.
They were both held, were they?
They both got 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And you have no idea why the shot was fired?
None. We can't say.
But we tossin' sna fianna a Hamish.
Fianna's.
Cain fianna a nyahithu's jahonta?
Oh, Hamish ta a nigga jigat oyeg.
Agus cain isha vi ogat an tamshin, ni roan
Well, vim a yadlin jigat eishan tamshin.
Sure. Well, nish, shachtan na koska no, an shachtan river, go jay harlan shoha mail first to.
Shachtan na koska no, shachtan river.
Shachtan wall, but a jerham.
Sure, Fe crinia yn sy'n hot yn y rôm o'r yn hot yn y rôm o'r Willowbank
Bohan Ogofyn
Chyn Bohan Agen hot y Willowbank sy'n bwch yn y wael
agos fi sy'n fe tren o'r island
Chyn fi mwyr y tren o'r agos fi mynd mas o'r mai fi yna fi slua Henry Joy agos slua Willie Nelson agos
Fi tos y McCracken
Fi, Henry Joy, fi. I guess, well, fi a sy'n gyrwyd yn tacl y hael ar ysgeri fi un i cys da fi crinio hwys yn sy'n hot. Agos fi yn y hwg leon agos hwy mis i agos Mick Waters y stiach agos to go o'r dda dwi'n ie couple of la rations couple of la the agony male agus really well agus a ve
ve
re
when your other male
well anye am dinner and la jesahane la nation
yeah well continue this in English Seamus you got orders anyhow on Good Friday was it
yes to have 2 days rations and be ready and to be at the Springfield Road corner. I'd be met there and get ready to go by train to Dungannon.
And you got the train?
I got the train. I couldn't just say when the time it was anyway, but in the train I was, I had a number of ground seats, given a parcel of ground seats and there was 5 or 6 in the train and had small arms and were getting them ready. And of course, there were others there who didn't belong to the volunteers and they were mystified to see men with small arms cleaning them there and talking.
There was no interference with you?
No interference at all. I think the people were much surprised. They didn't really understand what it was at that time. Of course, yeah. It was a holiday time at that time and people were going on holidays, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, how many of you were there all together?
I couldn't say how many,
between
but it looked
Fianna
like it'd be
volunteers.
About... there was 2 of us. Fianna left Belfast on Saturday. Others of the Fianna, for instance, Sean Kelly and Seamus Dempsey and others had been in Coleil, I think.
But, earlier in the week.
Earlier.
Mm-hmm. Would there be 200 men altogether in the...
Well, now, if there was 200, there would be, yes, I would say. There wasn't 200 in our... I suppose it would be about 60 or so in the group that went with us. I'm not sure now. Mm-hmm. But I'd say it would be somewhere about 200 mm-hmm. from Belfast altogether.
Yeah. Well, you arrived then in Dungannon.
I arrived in Dungannon. It was dark, and then we... Whatever we waited, we were at ease outside the station, and then we had to get ready again and go to Cole Island. When we arrived in Cole Island, we arrived
marched
somewhere.
Marched to Cole Island, did you?
Well, some.
Some marched.
Well, when we arrived in Cole Island, some were billeted in a
hall.
I'd say it was a barn. On the right side of the street, just beside the hall, St. Patrick's Hall there, on the street going towards the chapel. Then we were, different squads were billeted here and there, and we marched off to a place called Derry Tresk. And we were billeted in a little hall there, which was a house. And in the house there was a scroll above the mantelpiece to say, welcome to the volunteers.
Yes.
One side we had loaves and sugar, and on the other side of the we had boxes of cocoa milk and sugar and small arms ammunition.
Well, you were a sort of quartermaster yourself, Seamus.
Well, temporary. I was elected quartermaster, temporary being one of the Fianna there.
Mm-hmm. Well, what
to look after quartermaster, that was looking after the foodstuffs and counting the small arms ammunition and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, after Mass on Sunday, what did you do?
Well, by the way, you're speaking of Derry Tresk.
Mm-hmm.
Before Mass, we had to go and get eggs and stuff for breakfast for the OC in Derry Trest. And then we were, Mick Waters and I were given an order, some dispatch to go to for Coal Island.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked to Coal Island and met Petey Joe Barnes, OC, there, giving the dispatch. And then from Coal Island, we went to Mass. We went to Mass in Coal Island, of course,
mm-hmm.
and came back again. And then we had a forced march to Cookstown. But when we arrived somewhere about Stewartstown, Mick Waters and I got orders to go by sidecar to Coal Island and arrange refreshments for the volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
We remained some time in Coal Island, and in a shop about the centre of the main street in Coal Island, we couldn't get much but biscuits and minerals, and we waited there till after some time we saw the main body of the volunteers coming from the end of the street up the street, and we went by the sidecar again down the street to meet them. And just over the barrack, we had a bit of a tussle there with a police. It looked very serious. There had been some shooting, but the OC then gave orders not to fire.
Well, did the police just charge into the volunteers?
The volunteers were coming peacefully up the street, and just that a squad of the police rushed at the volunteer through the volunteers.
Mm.
And
there was a danger then of a skirmish,
and it could have been. I think we could have held, took over Coal Island,
yes.
Or took over rather Cookstown.
Yes.
On that day, but for the OC giving orders not to fire.
Mm-hmm.
Small arms, of course.
Yes.
I think there was four arrests then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Denny McCulloch was one, and Jerry Horley, another, who was killed in Cork then during the...
Well, there was one shot fired anyhow, wasn't there?
Yes, I heard there was one shot fired before on the road from Stewartstown to Coal Island to Cookstown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what really happened. I suppose one of the volunteers had been a bit...
He'd fallen by the wayside somewhere.
Yes, likely.
Had a drink too many, possibly. Yeah. Mm. Right, James, or Margaret. William, you're a son of Willie John Kelly, the famous IRB man.
Yes.
And he was a great friend of Tom Clark's.
Friend of Tom Clark's. Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember Tom Clark arriving in Dungannon here, just next door to where I reside at present, with some rifles from afar.
Around
1914, yes.
They were some of the hosts. Or yes. Kilcool guns, I believe.
I think Sean T. O'Kerry ex-president had chosen for a while.
That's right. Well, now, do you remember what happened in Easter week or around Easter week in 1916, William?
Well, I remember the Belfast men coming to Killeen on Holy Saturday night, and the mobilisation was cancelled and they had to return to Belfast on Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Did your people meet them here in Dungannon?
Yes, a brother of mine and another man by the name of Thomas Hamill boarded the train at Thrunmy Station and came to Dungannon with them and guided them onto Killeen.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was another effort then to mobilise after Easter Sunday.
Yes, the Dungannon and Donoghmore men were instructed to mobilise at Carrickmore on Easter Tuesday night, and there were some other men to meet them from Carrickmore, and I think Dr. McCartan was to be there with them, but when the Donoghmore and the Dungannon men arrived, there was no one there to meet them, only two RIC men.
Well, they didn't welcome
them. They didn't interfere with them, but they waited for a while and they just had to return home to Dungannon. Mm-hmm. Well, then on the Thursday of Easter week, a daughter of James Connolly's arrived in Tyrone and wanted to know what was wrong that they didn't make a move on Tuesday night. So a brother of mine, Thomas, and Tommy McGuigan went to Carrickmore with her to interview Dr. McCartan, but when they got there, Dr. McCartan couldn't be found. So that's as far as I can go with that.
Yeah. Well, did you ever hear anything about joining up with Liam Mellows and the Galway men?
No, the only thing I heard about was about they were to march from Carrickmore to Clare.
You never heard what they were to do in Clare?
No, I can't say what they had to do because I wasn't just directly and personally connected with the movement. I only stating this as I saw it myself as things were going on because my father and my brother were in the movement.
Yes. Well, how many men would there have been from Dungannon now in Coal Island?
Oh, well, I couldn't say how many would have been in Coal Island. I can only state how many went to Carrickmore on Tuesday night. I think it was about eight. Mm-hmm. There was Harry Hart and his son Peter, John Michael Vogue, Thomas Hamill, Robert Donaghy, a man by the name of McManus, he was in the chemist shop in Airy Street. But I don't remember his Christian name. And my father, Harry Hart, and Tom Megafogue is the next.
They're nearly all dead now,
I think Tom's the only one alive out of the crowd that went. I'm not sure about Mr. McManus. I heard he was still alive about Drogheda, but I don't know whether that's true or not.
Could you tell us, Seamus, how you collected the arms just before Easter week 1916?
Well, when we arrived in Belfast, it would be around 12 o'clock at night, and along with Pete the Bone and Sergeant the man there had met us, and they took us to somewhere, I don't just remember, around or opposite the Clonard Monastery, and they were loaded there. Clark's comrade.
Yeah. Well, who was with you on this expedition to Belfast, Seamus?
Well, the cart I was in was driven by a Hugh Rogers, 6 mile cross. And the other car was driven by Thomas McGuigan from Dungannon, and he was accompanied by William John Kelly, Sr. That was a comrade of Tom Clark's.
Well, how did you get on along the way? You had no accidents or anything?
Oh, we had one. I got a flat tire in Lisburn.
Not a very good place, I'd say.
Not a good place at all. Terribly bad at that time. Jeez, I can't
did
name,
you...
name of them fellows. He was a great man.
Well, did you managed to get it repaired?
Oh, there was a friend of ours there that I knew earlier at a chemist shop just in the cross. I just remember his name just at the moment. But we called there and he got us fixed up and started on the road again for Portie down on Tyrone.
Well, where did you put the arms when they did arrive?
Oh, we arrived with the arms safe and well, and dry trust for the most of them, and another place they called Cor, near Culloden.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were all ready then for the lads coming from Belfast.
All ready for the lads coming from Belfast. Every man had his own rifle and revolver labelled. So there's nothing to do, only hand them out.
Mm-hmm. But were they handed out?
They were, yes. There wasn't one went astray of any kind.
When were they handed out?
On Sunday.
Sunday morning?
Yeah.
And the people arrived from Belfast and from other places in Tyrone Saturday night, did they, on Sunday morning?
So they did as far as from South Derry.
There was a contingent from South Derry.
There was a big contingent of South Derry, arriving Cull Island too. There was a famous man there was with them and charged them. He's dead since Cube Gribben.
Mm-hmm.
You know them football chaps all.
Oh, yes. Some from Tomb Bridge and round
there?
Well,
that would be Tomb.
That's Tomb.
That's Tomb.
Yeah.
That'd be Tomb all around.
Well, then, what other parts of Tyrone did they come from?
All over Tyrone, Moomin all down, Carrickmore and Moy and Ballagolla.
Yeah. Ben Burb.
Ben Burb. Yeah. John Shields, you can put that. He's,
yes.
John Shields was there, one of our leading men.
Yes. Well, now, what happened when they all arrived? You were in charge of billeting them.
I was.
Well, what did that entail? What did you do? What had you to
get houses ready and beds and food and provide all that type of thing for them, you know, and light and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what sort of accommodation had they?
Oh, it was just camp life, you know. You might just call it camp life. You know what camp life would be? Kind of is?
Well, there was a hall in Derry Tress.
Oh, yes, there was a hall. And there was a good empty house in Annaghmore. That was McGrath's. Well, there was a good hall in Cull Island.
And where did the officers stay now?
The officers stayed off the hall. There was a place off the hall. No one, kind of officers' quarters.
Yes. And then on Sunday morning, what happened?
Well, they were all mobilised and paraded to the different churches where they were staying. Some of them went to King's Island. And the remainder went to Cull Island. Mass there, and then they all come back and got cleaned up and got their breakfast and got ready to parade for action. Every man seen that his rifle and ammunition was all correct, and we were ready at 2 o'clock then, when
the countermanding order came. Well, who got it?
McCullough had that with him, do you see?
McCullough brought the order with him.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what
was... Pim was there, and I don't mind who the... It was a whole lot of them. Archie Hearn was there. No, he was with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, it was decided that there was going to be nothing done.
It was, yes. It was decided going to be nothing done. They had that decided before they come to Cull Island.
I see.
They decided that up at McCartan's place, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you said.
Well, you were
in and out about.
You were disbanded then, were you? Were told to
disband.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you go with the Belfast men?
Only to Cookstown because I didn't know the road, but I came back then. And
well, were you? There was a bit of an incident too on the way to Cookstown.
There was.
What happened there?
There was an incident. There was two detectives followed the Belfast men. They came with them on the train on Saturday evening. And stopped in Cull Island Barrack on Saturday night. And then they walked after them to Cookstown. But this fella had fired a shot, John Dillon. He's about Belfast somewhere yet.
He's dead now, I think.
Is he dead?
Mercy on him, yes.
He fired a shot going into Cookstown. What's just a particular shot at somebody? He couldn't, you know, a hot-headed lad. And the policeman never said nothing, these detective fellas, till they come into Cookstown. And as soon as they arrived in Cookstown, he pointed this Dillon chap out to the police. Well, then he was arrested.
Wasn't Dennis McCullough arrested too?
No, he wasn't. Dillon was the only one. Just overhead of firing the shot, he was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
About a mile out of Cookstown, he fired the shot. I think it didn't need to do.
Yes. Yeah. Well, then there was another effort made to get the men together later on. Nora Connolly came around.
Monday night? Yeah.
Well, did you meet her?
I did. We were all mobilised on Monday night. And I wanted her to stay here. And I believe if she had stayed here, we could have made a stand of some kind somewhere. She seemed to be the only one had any backbone among them. That's true.
Well, she decided to go on.
She said, if there was going to be no fighting in Carlisle, she says, if there's going to be no fighting here, if you're not going to fight, we'll go back to Dublin.
Yes.
And back they did go.
She went back then on the train to Dungannon and Dundalk.
No, got a car to Dungannon and took the midnight train. Went on to Dundalk and Dublin.
Yes. Well, what was the plan of operation if there had been a rising now, if there had been some action? What was going to happen, Seamus?
Well, the plan of operation was, as far as I know, we were to mobilise in Carlisle at 2 o'clock and march for Pomeroy, take over Pomeroy Barrack, go on to Carrickmore, take over it, go on to Lomé and take over all government barracks and such like there, and cut out then west through Dromore and Fintna for Inniskillen and down into Swillen Bar, and from that on to Munner Hamilton in Leitrim and down into Sligo. Colooney, I think it was.
Colooney.
Colooney and meet the...
The Galway men.
Meet the Galway, your man.
Mellows.
Meet Leo Mellows there and create an Irish territory down the west from Sligo down to Galway and hold that fast, fortify the Ivan. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, that was about the plans now.
Well, something could have been done, you think, if they had set about it.
No doubt about it.
Some blow could have been struck.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, did you ever hear that Seamus Connolly had said that not a shot would be fired in Ulster, that he hadn't intended any rising in Ulster?
Well, these plans were made by the Supreme Council of the IRB, by the War Council. And Sir James Connolly must have knew all about that, mustn't
he? He must have.
He did do.
And he did, in fact, send his daughter back.
Doesn't that show you?
Afterwards.
He's two daughters.
Two daughters. Mm-hmm. So that you don't think that that was his intention, that there shouldn't be some action here.
No.
Yeah.
It was a good idea if we could have got through to join up with Mellows in the West. It would have helped them terribly well in Dublin.
It would.
Do you see?
How would you have managed? What sort of transport had you, say?
Well, we'd have commandeered if one would have got from a donkey to a racehorse.
Yes.
Yeah. There was lots of horses.
There was lots of horses and carts
in the country. Pairs of horses and ponies. Mm-hmm. And we could have got there, a good lot of us could have got there some way, through horse transport.
And you had the arms, too.
We had the arms. We had lots of arms.
Yeah. They were all found afterwards, weren't they, by the military?
No, not at all, no.
Well, some of them were taken,
No, many good was taken, no.
I see.
Oh, well, even Thompson guns. I just brought all the way to America were good.
You had a Thompson gun, hadn't you, on your way down from Belfast, even?
Had.
Yeah. All the way through Lisburn and all... Ported down and all the other places.
Yes, and your man had a German Savage automatic revolver that was driven.
I see.
Cue.
Yeah. Well, now, when nothing happened, you did make an effort to get to Dublin, Seamus.
Oh, we kind of a one, you know, but it was terribly hard to make one. Willie John Kelly and myself. I don't know about that.
What did you do?
I would need to see Kelly about that, you know. He might say something, get my own name out.
Well, you got as far as Portadown, didn't you?
Yeah.
How did you get there?
Bicycles. Stool bicycles and got there.
Yes.
Commandeered, rather.
Commandeered is the word,
the
yeah.
Word. Commandeered yes. Bicycle is the word.
Yes. Well, at Portadown, what happened?
Oh, we could get no further. No transport there, nothing else there. No trains going at all.
Yeah. So that was the end of the rising.
That
as far
was
as
the end were. Of our rising.
Joe, did you meet the Belfast volunteers when they arrived here in Cole Island?
Yes, I did.
On Easter Sunday morning or Saturday night?
Saturday evening.
Saturday evening. At what time?
Around about 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday evening, they arrived at the little volunteer hall at Dyetresk. And from there, there was a posting of them billeted in the hall. another postion built it in a farmhouse some short distance away. Another postion in Coal Island. Mm-hmm. Well, they remained there during the night, all the usual arrangements, and they were supplied with refreshments and all that.
That was part of your job, was it, to see that they got something to eat?
Well, yes, I give a hand in that respect, but the ladies in the district were most generous in that respect.
Mm-hmm. They helped too?
Well, they helped out very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Was Nora Connolly among them?
Nora Connolly was there. Yes, she stopped in a house by the name of McGrath mm-hmm. in Derrytresk. Mm-hmm. That's where she was entertained.
Well, do you remember an incident that evening where one of the lads shot himself through the foot or something?
Ah, like yes, that was accidental. Ah, it wasn't much, you know, it was accidental, but Nora Connolly was called on to attend around the first aid than usual. Mm-hmm.
There was nothing else of any great account that night, though?
Ah, well, no, there wasn't.
They all went to bed and...
They all settled down for the night anyway. And... They went to Mass on Sunday morning in King's Island Chapel, paraded to Mass here. It is a bit unusual to see a military torn out to the... A lot of the people didn't really understand what was taking place.
Yes. Well, there were arms here too.
Oh, yes.
Well, they weren't distributed actually to the...
Ah, no, not on... The countryman Norther had done away with that part of it.
Mm-hmm. So they only had small arms?
Well, anything they had, I suppose, were concealed small arms on their person, any of them that had them, mm-hmm. I would say.
Well, now, what sort of efforts were made afterwards to get the men together when it was decided to go ahead, when fighting had actually started in Dublin now?
Well, things were quite chaotic in this part of the country. That countryman Norther did an awful harm in that respect. In my opinion, it left things quite, well, mixed up, you might say.
Yes, nobody knew what to do.
Nobody knew what to do, mm-hmm. and you were just watching and waiting.
Yeah. Well, were you kept under mobilisation orders? Or?
Oh, yes, you were on mobilisation order for a good few days.
Mm-hmm. Well, some people went to Carrickmore afterwards. Were there any from Derrytresk, say?
I'm not sure about that. I don't think there was.
Yeah. Did you hear anything about the campaign they had planned?
Oh, yes. We knew all about the campaign, all right. Of course, the countryman Norther knocked that all on the head as far as the ordinary volunteer was concerned.
Yeah. It was all over, really. Once the countermanding order came,
as far as
this part was concerned.
It was, certainly.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.